Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening.
Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Jung. He received his medical degree from the University of Liverpool, England, completed an internal medicine residency at Sinai Hospital in Detroit, and fellowship training in rheumatology and geriatric medicine at the University of Michigan. He is board certified in internal medicine, geriatric medicine, hospice and palliative medicine, and rheumatology. His clinical interests include the management of arthritis in older adults, and he is the editor of two textbooks, including Geriatric Rheumatology, A Comprehensive Approach. He's also the recipient of various NIH awards, including the NIH Individual National Research Service Award, Clinical Investigator Award, and the Paul Beeson Physical Faculty Scholars in Aging Research Award. In addition, he has received the American College of Rheumatology's Senior Rheumatology Scholar Award and has been continuously funded by the NIH since 1994, focusing his research on gene-environment interaction, chronic inflammation, and aging. He is currently funded by NIH in his research effort on the effects of early life nutrition on late life inflammatory disease development. He was chief of the Division of Geriatric and Palliative Medicine and is director of the Institute of Gerontology and the director of Geriatric Center at the University of Michigan. He held the interim chair of the Department of Internal Medicine and is also currently the executive vice chair of Internal Medicine. Dr. Jung, it's so nice to meet you. And we're going to talk today about aging with spondyloarthritis, but you have I love the multidimensional approach. So thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So when we talked in the green room, I mentioned I hadn't really thought too much about this. I like to think I'm 22. How does spondyloarthritis impact individuals as they age, or is the question vice versa?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I like you how you started off by saying that you feel like you're 21, and we all do. And so I think we can continue to feel young as long as we have a purpose in life. So it doesn't matter how old you are, if you have a purpose in life, you will be young. So I think that's something to remember. And thinking about ankylosing spondylitis is something that is not as common as some of the other rheumatic diseases that a rheumatologist like myself would look after. At the same time, with the aging population, we are also seeing more and more people either had an arthritis, spondyloarthropathies when they were younger in age, and now they're getting older, and they're now dealing with both the consequences of their longstanding spondylitis and the effect of aging as well. So that's one group. And so there are many aspects that you can think about how the aging affects the disease and how the disease affects aging, both the chicken and egg about this. And both are important. And I think likely too is that people who are now in the, if you like, the older adult age, we don't like to use the word geriatrics, you know, with older adults in that age group, oftentimes because ankylosing spondylitis and some of these spondyloarthropathies tend to start when you are much younger in age. So that at that time, if you're talking about 40 years ago, when someone is 20 or 30 years old, or 20, 30 or 40 years old, and now 30, 40 years later, at the time 30 years ago, we didn't have many good treatments. And so we see a lot of the long-term consequences of this age group as they now become older adults in the near the retirement age.
Oh, sure, because they were diagnosed without
the biologics out of drugs that we do.
Gotcha. So there's, and hopefully the next generation behind them is a whole different set of research.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of the important reasons why we want to treat to target and really be aggressive in our treatment in younger adults, in part because we don't want them to have these late life consequences from chronic inflammation that can affect so many aspects of one's life.
So I'm going to go in the weeds here. I promised you I would. Your current research is on early nutrition to essentially have an impact on later in life. Are you able to talk a little bit about this? Because I think this is the part of the treat to target or target to treat. And
yeah, we think about, you know, in rheumatic diseases, when does the process begin? And as you know, there is the genetic component, and then there's the environment. Not everyone has the same genes, not everyone has B27. Will develop ankylosing spondylitis in the same way that you have to have the environmental exposure. So the question is, where do these two circles meet in the Venn diagram? And what our interest has been for a while was to look at how, look at the epigenome as a way to think about that interaction between genes and environment. So, and our epigenome, our genes that we inherit from our parents and grandparents, but our epigenome is something that we also inherited from our parents and grandparents, but also are affected by the environment that they have been exposed to. And so part of what we have been interested in is to understand how this early life, particularly nutrition, during a vulnerable time or during a time when our gene and epigenome are forming in the mother's womb, can influence our risk to chronic inflammatory diseases later on in life.
So you're looking at in utero, essentially.
Yeah, early life, or including, you know, when the baby, we aren't allowed to apparently experiment with pregnant women.
Right.
So we have to use animal models to look at some of these questions. So we have been looking at some of the during pregnancy from the time of conception to few weeks after the babies are born to see how diet can influence their susceptibility to diseases later in life.
Interesting. And is there a baseline for general population on that?
Baseline is in, if you like, a traditional American diet type of thing. So there's that, but then we are particularly interested in the micronutrients, things that not just about how much protein or carbohydrates or fat you're taking, but how do some of these micronutrients that we call things like methyl donors that can affect the process called DNA methylation, which is the key process that determines our epigenome.
That's fascinating. Okay, I'm going to come back to the regularly scheduled programming. We'll talk more about research a little bit. But so for people as they age, you touched on it, this chicken and egg. Are there specific challenges that people with spondyloarthritis have?
Yeah, I mean, again, talking about the group of spondyloarthritis patients who had their illness early in life, as most do, and now they are older. So as we get older, there are many processes in our body that happen to us then most of them are difficult, right? This is why we have this aging process. And over time, the natural aging process can influence the spondylitis patients. So one of the things that have been explored in recent years, and not in so much yet in spondyloarthritis, but in rheumatic diseases in general, is the concept that people with these chronic inflammatory diseases, like rheumatoid, maybe like ankylosing spondylitis and so on, may have an accelerated aging process. So that these chronic inflammation, think about what are the processes that are important in the biology of aging. So there are a lot of interest in thinking about this. Some people, have different names that we sometimes talk about this. And sometimes it's called pillars, and sometimes it's called hallmarks of aging. And when you look at those processes that be identified as central to aging process, many of them are also affected by diseases like spondylitis and rheumatoid and so on and so forth. So there's a concept that there may be accelerated aging in some of these chronic inflammatory diseases. So this is one way to think about it in terms of where the two intersect. And the natural aging process, of course, means that there are also issues that are age-related diseases that a 30-year-old may not be able to think about. But when you're in your 60s and 70s and so on, now you really have to think about how do the two intersect. One example would be in the world of osteoporosis. We know that our peak bone mass, we achieve our peak bone mass when we are maybe 20, 22 years old, that young age, and then from there, then we gradually lose bone mass. And we also know that in ankylosing spondylitis, for example, osteoporosis is very common, in part maybe related to the systemic inflammation, in part because of the steroid use, but also maybe because oftentimes people with chronic arthritis are not as active as those who don't. And you can imagine that age-related osteoporosis and how that then intersect with the natural process related to SPON can make things even more difficult for people. And the mobility-associated problem, they're at fall risk, and then fracture and all these other complications can follow. In just one example.
Okay, so let's talk hopeful. Of course, we all age. But as you get there, I mean, like you mentioned fall risks. What exercise, does it help?
Absolutely. And I think, one thing I tell people is that I can't change your birth certificate. There are certain things in life that we cannot change. But my focus, I would suggest that we should focus on that piece of the pie that we have control over rather than that piece of the pie that we don't have control over. So there are things that are important that I think we need to focus on. And let me just make it clear too. I ask this question to my patients very regularly about basically to find out what is most important to them. And when you ask that question to a 30-year-old, the answer could be quite different from someone who is 70 or 75.
I hope so.
And the average age of my patient is closer to 80. And as we get old, as our longevity continues to be, as we live longer and longer, that's something that is important to think about. So things that we can control and things that can be helpful to us, including diet and physical activities and exercises, and also our mental health. Don't ever forget about that aspects of our lives that we actually can have a lot of control over. And when we cannot control our body, there are a lot of things in our environment that we can also adapt.
Right. And so I just turned 50, and what's important to me now is to feel this good when I'm 80. That's my top of my list. Joints are a big deal for a lot of us with spondylitis. Are there certain things people can do as they age? And I want to go through some of the other things you'd mentioned, but.
Yeah. So there are a number of things I think you want to pay attention to as we get older. One is, of course, again, making sure that we are we control our disease, working with our health professional to make sure that then the long-term sequelae won't be. And there's quite a lot of data suggesting now, more and more data suggesting, if we can control that inflammation earlier on, that the we will reduce that long-term consequences. So that's something that's important that we can do today, is to make sure that instead of worry about, oh boy, you know, thinking about what is most important to you. And oftentimes, again, I'm finding, especially in the older folks, as we get older, it's not so much about quantity of life as much as quality of life. And so having that understanding and that balance and making sure that not just you, but your family knows what your wishes are is important.
Yeah.
And there may come a time when we are not able to make decisions for ourselves.
Right. I don't want that anytime soon for anyone. But around some of these, like the joints, and I guess, right, exercise and diet may lead into the joint function. Yeah. But are there things that you would tell everyone that ideally, if they can, they should be doing?
Yeah. And joint protection. I oftentimes would say at least get some physical therapy sessions. And when we are older, occupational therapy is just as important. So physical therapy oftentimes focus about your strength and range of motion. But occupational therapy, a lot of focus will be your interaction with your environment.
Right.
Having both aspects to help you as we get older is important. And don't shy away getting that type of professional support. The kind of things that can improve your quality of life significantly. So making sure that that is an important thing. Joint protection is important. And for some of my patients, I specifically will refer them for fall prevention and gait training. So those are also important, because you remember, obviously, in the old days where we see all the pictures is that we get like this, and then people will be walking like this. And that's what we don't want to happen. And one of the important things as we get older, and again, life expectancy doesn't seem to be affected too much with angspond, for example, but our independence is important. So issues such as driving, ability to keep us driving, that we take it for granted when we're younger, something like this and the assessment and adaptive devices that are available would also be important to maintain our independence.
Following on to that, but you touched on, right, mental well-being, overall general well-being. So I'm going to summarize that doing and taking part in maybe physical therapy in order to continue the quality of life over time can, I'm going to say, is correlated. I don't know if there's a causative factor there, but it's correlated to probably better well-being.
And physical function and activities of daily living, instrumental activities of daily living. Those are the things that as we get older become more and more important, again, than just, you know, how many more years do I live? But it's really about what type of quality of life do I have? And those are the important things that can improve your mobility, improve your independence. And so that's why it's important. In terms of mental health that you were just mentioning, there are conditions that are more and more prevalent as we get older. Things like anxiety, things like depression, things like isolation. Think about what we just went through with the COVID pandemic, the isolation that older people particularly have that are not so easy compared with the younger people who have more ways to connect with each other. So those are the things that we need to pay attention to as well.
Yeah. And I know there's more ways to be connected. I don't know if I love them all, but have you changed over the course of your career or evolved in the way you approach what your viewpoint is on aging and spondyloarthritis?
Yeah, I think we shouldn't have this all negative feeling about aging. Unfortunately, the longer I'm in the business, the more I recognize ageism is very prevalent both in the healthcare system as well as the general population. And so I have grown to appreciate that a lot more over time, and understanding that the literature would suggest that, do you think that 80-year-old in general are just going to be less happy than 25-year-old? The answer may be surprising, that overall that might not be the case. And so there's a lot of gerontological studies that look at what aging means to people. And so there are a lot of also positive things that we can get from as we get older.
Oh, for sure. Sometimes it's way before I had spondylitis. We used to say when we were 25, we all sat around and, you know, you couldn't afford anything. You were happy, but you didn't know. You didn't know what was coming in life. So you touched a bit on family and friends. How does that help as people age?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I say. I wear my hat as a geriatrician. And I said, my definition of successful aging is having daughters. Or damn good daughter-in-laws.
Okay.
And part of the point is really is just to emphasize the importance of family and friends. And sometimes it takes work because over time, as we get older, people move away. Our friends that we established may have moved away, or we have lost people over our lifetime as well, both family and friends. So it does take some proactive effort to maintain that relationship. Yeah. I jokingly say that I also have worked in our VA system for many years. And I jokingly say that sometimes the closest relatives that some of my veterans have will be their ex-wife or a distant niece who have not seen them for a long time. So those are the situations that proactively we can build those relationships over time and think about this, because it's not just about moving closer to your children as we get older, but what makes the most sense for you in that bigger picture. I think what retirement means and what type of living condition, and think more longer term about what your needs may be evolving over time and plan things ahead.
Yeah, planning is, I think, critical. Okay, let's move on to food. Is there anything specifically that you recommend as kind of a rule of thumb?
So I get this question very often, and there is no great data to say this. And there are you can think about it in two ways. One is an anti-inflammatory diet. If you think about inflammation, and remember, as we get older, there's also a condition called aging or inflammation that goes with age. So the chronic stimulation of our immune system over a lifetime means that the inflammation proteins gradually rises without natural age, and that may be a risk factor, heart disease and cancer and other wonderful things that we sometimes get when we get older. And so an anti-inflammatory diet may be something to consider. And right now, I would say that in my own reading, I would still say the Mediterranean diet remains the one that has the best outcome in my view. So I would say that that's one thing. Number two, weight control is something important for a lot of spondyloarthritis, and that can be associated with worse outcome when we're younger. But as we get to the older age group, then be careful about weight loss with dieting. Because unlike young people, we lose a lot more muscle mass when we lose weight in older age. So be careful about just dieting without corresponding in physical activities and exercise to make sure that you don't lose a lot of muscle mass and therefore will reduce your ability to, mobility and other issues. So be careful about that as well.
This is kind of a wild question that just came out, which is, if some of those are the contributing factors around diet or the contributing factors to successful aging, we'll call that, what do we need to do to get the data that supports that more broadly or understand more broadly?
It is a good point. So we don't have enough data in research to better understand how aging affects this particular population. There just isn't enough data out there. And there are many aspects of things that will need more investment as we continue to see more and more people age and with rheumatic diseases like ankylosing spondylitis. There are so many aspects, understanding the interaction between the disease and the aging process that I briefly mentioned earlier, that they overlap in many cases. So there are some, for example, just one of them is looking at senescent cells. So as we get older, we have more of these so-called senescent cells, and there are in animal work, you can cause the animals to be younger by getting rid of these senescent cells. And in some disease process, it turns out that, and more are now being recognized, they're also accumulation of these senescent cells. So all the way now to clinical trials, people are looking at how that may then influence the outcome of some diseases. One that has been published is in idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and people are looking at scleroderma and some of these other things.
Sure.
As far as I am aware, it has not been extended, the study have not been extended to the spondyloarthropathies yet, for example.
Okay.
So in terms of research, understanding whether these so-called pillars of aging and how they intersect with these diseases like spondyloarthritis, arthropathies, and how influencing, one, the rate of aging can also help the outcome of multiple diseases. So just because we think about spondyloarthropathies, people with spondyloarthropathies have a lot more heart disease, a lot more osteoporosis and other age-related kind of diseases. So broadly thinking about how that may influence multiple things in this patient population as we get older is one way to think about it.
Okay. What do you think the biggest advancements in research have been that either hold promise or have helped with aging beautifully?
Yes. I think this is where you get to the world of so-called gerosciences. And I'm part of these national groups that are very interested to thinking about how we can bend the curve of aging. This is not about curing aging. So if you hear that, run away. But it's really about how can we maintain our wellness for a longer period of time, and that will be a worthwhile goal. So there are many exciting things that are going on in this sphere. Without going into too much specific, but really a lot of these are targeting multiple processes. And as a rheumatologist in my training and so on, we have become adapted, a somewhat reductionist approach, that we want to find this single molecule that we can just change this, everything will be beautiful. Huh. And more we're recognizing that, particularly in the aging world, is really more think about a spider web. And when we change one thing, we pull on one string, there are many things that happens. Some goes up, some goes down, and it's net effect, and there are off-target effects that we have to also be aware of. So it's an exciting time. It's, you know, Dickens line, again, it's the best of time and worst of time. Yeah. Times and so science is amazing these days, and what we would take us months and months to do in the past, now we can get done in days. And science is really moving a lot, and other areas that I have not talked about, things like stem cells and issues and all these other things could really change. And cell-based and gene-based therapy is now into the medical world. And so we are really coming up to a really exciting time in science.
I hope you can speed it up for many of us. So overall, as a provider yourself, how can providers help patients as they go down this path?
And one thing to think about, more and more important, is to think about a multidisciplinary care program. Especially as people get older, it's not just about the doctor and the patient and this is it. I think you really have to think about the whole person. And that's where I think sometimes the medicine these days is not quite there oftentimes. That team-based patient care, patient-centered care is not always there for many, many of patients. And it becomes more and more important as we get older, that team-based approach in care. So that's one thing that will encourage us to think about as a society, to how to finance our healthcare system in such a way that is patient-centric and allow some of these to be a normal process for how we look after older folks with chronic illnesses.
Yeah, and maybe it all begins with your research on early nutrition and early, that's a stretch possibly, but I think there may be something there, but I agree. I think we have to look at it differently as a nation, we'll say for now. We're about out of time. I would love to know if there's anything we didn't cover, and if what your big hope for the future is for people as they age beautifully.
My big hope is to be out of a job.
All right, I like it.
Fantastic. Work myself out of a job so that, you know, I'm encouraged. I would want to just end with a more encouraging thought, is that when I first started as a fellow in training, spondylitis patients had so few treatment options, and literally they really come in, and you can, over time, you can see them becoming more and more disabled, and that has been very frustrating for us in terms of the things that we could do. But really, the excitement is that what I'm excited about is that there are many options now, but these are not easy treatments sometimes, and they're for a variety of reasons, costs and everything else, and the complications, some of the infection risks and things like that. So we do have to, you know, move carefully, but at the same time, I would say boldly go where we haven't been before, because I really do believe that we have a very bright future in rheumatology. The hard part is just, you know, we are still facing active issues like not enough rheumatologists, you know, and there doesn't look like there will be enough rheumatologists. So as a profession, we also need to redefine and decide who we are, and how do we practice medicine. But really, the treatments that we have now is just so so amazing for many of our patients. So I do want to make sure that we end with that really positive note as well.
Well, thank you. I like to keep the positive note right going. But thank you so much for taking the time. It's been very interesting. I learned a lot about the next few chapters, and I'm sure most of our listeners did. But thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much, too.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.